Welcome to Mustard Ayonnaise. I am Matt. And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Mainly, we're talking about movies and TV and DVDs and video games and computers and whatever loud toy my kid is playing with upstairs.
That's upstairs? That is loud.
Well, it echoes down the hallway or echoes down the staircase. And, yeah, that's what we do, and we do it on a mostly weekly basis. I almost never make it into the theater because of that aforementioned child. But I did see a new Netflix movie last week, and I think you got into a movie.
Did you?
Maybe that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago, because I was sick last week. My dad went to go see Green Hornet, but I didn't see it.
Intriguing. All right, well, I guess I can launch in. Sure. We got the A-Team.
Oh, boy.
Exactly. It was okay. I think my biggest complaint is that they used that A-Team music about 75% too often. I mean, it was literally, I felt like it was a constant refrain. It was probably only used 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
But really, it should have been used once, maybe twice. Kind of like, you know, when we were talking about Battlestar Galactica a couple weeks ago or something, and you pointed out that they only used the 70s series theme music twice in the entire new run of the episode. Out of four, you know, drawn out over many years seasons, they had the self-control to use it twice.
And both times it was like, thrilling. It was kind of cool, and if you didn't know it, didn't matter, and if you did, it was cool. It was awesome.
Exactly, and it really worked in, and it really worked, and you know, it was effective and sunk in, and it was amazing. And in the A-Team, every 30 seconds it felt like dun 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 dun. You're like, oh, I get it. Okay, I get it. Other than that, you know, it was okay. I certainly enjoyed Charlton Stepley, or whatever that guy's name is. The South African actor from District 9.
Yeah.
As you pointed out, you forgot it was him until he did the South African accent.
Yeah.
He does an amazing American accent. And I have no idea how hard it is for a non-American to do an American accent, but, you know, he really vanished into the role. You know, overall, I thought it was a little too indistinct. You know, if you didn't call it the A-Team and you rebranded some of the characters, there wasn't really too much that was unique about it versus some other random action film. You know, there was this silly subplot with Jessica Biel. I mean, I guess that was the plot, but just sort of she was in it and she had some history with Face, and you're just, okay, whatever. I don't know. It just seemed very like a by the numbers action movie. Not horrible, but not that great.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of my video. And of course I figured out the whole bad guy situation very quickly. Very proud of myself.
I
guess I don't really have too much else to say about it. Oh, the other thing was they had Liam Neeson lighting cigars about as often as they played the theme music.
I know.
With a
self-satisfied grin on his face, and yeah.
Which was just a little too much. A lot too much, actually. It's, you know, Joe Carnahan not having a great subtle touch there.
Yeah, if there's any way to defend him, it's that the movie is a pretty outstanding replication of a really awful TV series, non-subtle TV series. So it took pretty much, you know, a lot of the stuff that was in that TV series, and it just did a big screen version of. And the problem is, it was kind of horrible on TV. And
that's one of those things where, you know, I loved the show when I was a kid, and of course haven't seen it since I was a kid. So it has that patina of greatness, and And so you're saying it's a horrible TV show, but that's not what I remember. Now, of course, were I to go back and watch it today, it probably would be a horrible TV show.
Yeah, but, you know, another great TV show was The Dukes of Hazzard.
Exactly. I loved that show when I was a kid. Now, that's one where I have come to realize that it's probably not that great a show were I to go back and watch it. With A-Team, I haven't even gotten to that point of thinking. So yeah. It's... I would think it's actually like a lot of people. They have this, you know, this sort of warm, fuzzy feeling of remembering the show without having watched it as through an adult's more critical eye.
Yeah, and I would say there's no reason to. I mean, to make it as big and bold and as dumb, even because, like you're saying, people actually have real fond memories. They don't remember the creaky bad stuff, so. Don't emphasize that. I mean, there's been some pretty good movies based on creaky old TV series that we didn't remember how bad they were, like Mission Impossible and stuff like that. So there's no reason to stick with that. But anyway, my recollection is I didn't hate the A-Team. I mostly kind of liked it in a really diminished expectations kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, it's fun.
I liked some of their I liked the big scene where they're in the tank and the plane is being blown up around them. It was just super crazy, was incredibly stupid, and I thought, oh, that's, I like this. It's incredibly stupid, you know? I mean, I kind of enjoyed it for the most part. I think my feeling was it was like a solid B-, solid C-plus kind of movie.
Yeah. So that was the A-Team. Current Netflix disc is the last Pacific disc, but we haven't started it on the last two episodes yet. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I guess that's really it in terms of new entertainment. Excuse me. You know, I watched a little bit of TV, but nothing that's worth talking about.
Boy, I haven't hardly watched TV. I don't know what's going on with me.
Although you did, and you were extremely excited to announce to me at work that you had gotten a 50 megabit connection from Comcast.
Yeah, I got I upgraded because it was like relatively cheap. So I had that upgrade, which was kind of interesting. My old cable modem couldn't handle it, so I had to go get from Comcast, which... This is a cheap deal, but I have to rent their cable modem for $5 a month. But it's one of those SOX 3.0 compatible ones that can handle up to like 150 megabits. Anyway, so I got that, and then I got a new Wi-Fi N dual range, dual whatever modem, Wi-Fi, which is kind of awesome in and of itself, because I didn't realize how bad and old and slow my old one was, but. Anyway, so I got this this new super fast modem, and it's kind of awesome. Although it's interesting, you realize quickly. So at this point now, the limits are entirely imposed by other things. So you may like if you're going to download a file, depending on where you go from. Like I logged on to my work account and I downloaded, like I was just testing it, so I dragged across a 100 megabyte file and it downloaded in 19 seconds, which is pretty amazing for a 100 megabyte file. And then I downloaded a gigabyte file, which took, I think under 2 minutes, which is awesome. But I go to YouTube and I hit something just on the regular speed. And sure enough, it stutters, it stops occasionally because freaking YouTube and their genius algorithm, they only like send enough data for you to play like plus like 3 or 4 seconds of a video because they don't want to send too much data. But the problem is if they don't do that exactly right, it stutters and stops. So there I am with the fattest pipe on the planet Earth and not even a high definition video is stuttering on their channel. It's crazy. It makes you mad.
Yeah, I was thinking about it since you mentioned it, and really, aside from the Netflix streaming, I don't really know that I would benefit from tremendously fast downloading. I just don't do enough online. You know, I don't pull down large files.
Well, yeah, even me, I'm in the same boat with you. The minute I got it, I realized, okay, I can sort of see why they're not charging, at least for a while, that much more for this, because you start to realize for these companies, at a certain point, giving somebody a faster internet connection doesn't really change the equation much. It just means they're going to get what data they get a little bit faster. But in reality, they're not going to be that much bigger of a consumer. And immediately I realized, boy, when my like deal is up, I'm not so sure I'm going to keep the speed, because it doesn't matter that much. Because I tried to like max it out. So I had like a Netflix stream going on. I had my Slingbox going on. I had my mom in here. I was, you know, doing something. I had all this stuff, and it wasn't, it was barely blipping. But in reality, the most I could ever do is have my Netflix stream running, and then I might download a file. And that's always slowed down Netflix. It won't happen now. But that, I rarely do that ever. So I completely concur with you. It almost has no impact on anything. You just notice, wow, I downloaded a file faster. Well, how often do you do that? So it's as much as I like it and I joke about becoming one with the internet and stuff, it sort of is apparent. It was apparent to me within 5 minutes that when the deal is up and it jumps up to $100 a month, there's very little chance I'll keep it. Why? Why, you know, why bother?
You know, it's funny. I wonder what, like South Korea, do they do something with the internet that we're not doing, aside from, you know, StarCraft? But, you know, I wonder, are they doing something that would really benefit from their high speed?
I was thinking that exact same thing. My suspicion is not really, that they just have it available and accessible. But my suspicion is no. Because I can't think of anything other than the only thing that does that is there's two things that benefit date or file transfers, which what would that be? But two is some form of video. And even it's only taken up a quarter of your stream at the very, very giant outset, high outset. And in reality, it's taken up about a tenth of your stream.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were a rabid, pirater, then it would benefit you because you get your torrents very fast and you can get your big video files very fast.
But even then, I'm telling you, it's hard to max that out. You know, even with torrent, it doesn't matter. You're entirely dependent on the speeds of others,
I don't know.
Anyway, so I really love it, but you start to immediately realize, yeah, what difference? I mean, when they talk about how we're at a gap because South Korea averages 100 megabits, yeah, I think we should average it too. But the practical consideration is I'm not totally sure why. It doesn't seem to make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
So, but I do love it. I'm happy to have it. It's awesome, but kind of an extravagance.
So we should probably make the rest of the show random topic.
Absolutely.
So one thing that I did last, was it Friday? God, it's so funny because we had our 2-day offsite meeting at work.
Yep.
And between that and Thursday, just insanely busy catching up with things.
Yeah. Thursday, especially for me, was crazy. I had 7 meetings in an 8-hour day. I've never had that many meetings in my life. I felt like Ray Liotta at the end of Goodfellas, yeah, where he's making the spaghetti and trying to worry about the drugs. It was crazy.
And through most of Friday, also insanely busy. And then Friday afternoon, I get caught up. I was, oh, yes. And you finally get to that point when it's like, it's starting to get 3 o'clock and you're winding up and you get to 3:30, 4 o'clock. And you're like, it's 4 o'clock on a Friday. I'm completely caught up. I have work I can do, but there's just no way I'm starting something new at 4 o'clock on a Friday. It's just not going to happen. So I start talking with a buddy and I start poking around Google Voice, and you had chastised me, a couple weeks, a month ago.
Yeah.
What's going on upstairs? Kids thumping around. Sorry. Because you have a Google Voice number and you're like, why don't you get one? Why don't you get one? And I resisted because I didn't want to change my number. And for some reason, it didn't occur to me that I could get a Google Voice number in addition to my existing phone number. Yeah. I thought I had to replace it. And I don't know why I was being so dense about that. But so I finally poke around and realized, and I was like, oh, well, if it's in addition to, then who cares? Because I really like my cell phone number. I've had it for a while, and I'm not giving it up. Yeah. So anyway, I go to the Google Voice, and first time I think to do it, it's on my iPhone. And I go to voice.google.com, and it's like, okay, sign in. And you click on it. Well, I don't have an account yet. You know, and it says, oh, well, we don't let you do this from a mobile phone. You have to do it from a desktop. And my first thought is, dear God, why? If I can get a full browser, and there's nothing about their sign-up experience that needs, well, there's an interactive thing to get the number. Maybe that's Flash. Maybe that's why they don't let you do it.
Yeah.
Hard to believe. Well, that's the only thing I can think of, but it doesn't let you do it on mobile phone, which pisses you off.
Yeah, I don't even remember that.
So anyway, I go to my, I guess I was at my work computer, and I start looking it up. And it brings, and when you first start, it brings up the UI of type in an area code or zip code, and or type in a phrase, like from Line of Fire, ukulele. Remember, that was one of the things he had to figure out, was ukulele was actually a phone number.
Yeah.
So okay, so you know, we live in Seattle. You type in 206, no phone numbers available.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go around, you know, 425, no numbers available. 360, no numbers available. I didn't think to do 509, but who wants a 509 number?
I know, I'd take a Guam number.
I type in my zip code, no numbers available. And you start realizing, okay, what numbers are available? And you leave both fields blank, and it doesn't let you do that. I tried XXX, doesn't let you do that. And I start realizing, well, this is the worst UI ever.
I know.
To be Richard Hyperbolic about it. But literally, it's, okay, if I can't get my first couple choices, then it doesn't matter. But now I can't figure out anything. Do I just start typing in random area codes? That's stupid. And beyond that, what if I really wanted a 206 number? Should I wait? Are they going to buy more numbers? Will more become available?
No, they're essentially out. They got 1 million numbers 18 months ago, but
there's nothing there to indicate that. I have no idea.
I know. I understand
that. As a consumer who wants to use their service. And it's, so I type in something related to my gamer tag, which comes up, and I think, okay, sure. And I actually now have a Pittsburgh Google Voice phone number, which I find very funny.
Yeah, I was thinking when I talked to you about that, I thought it was kind of funny because I was thinking, what would I have done? And I think I would have started to think of famous cities or locations that would be memorable and funny, like Beverly Hills, or you know, I couldn't think of any, so it was a little bit tough. But yeah, going with your gamer tag was a cool solution, regardless. Because as you're saying, it makes no difference in the age of mobile phones where everything is local call.
Well, the only trick is my gamer tag's a little hard to spell. So in terms of it just being tossing off a quick and easy, like, you know, I'm MadKiller26, okay. You know, it incorporates kind of a weird word. But anyway, so yeah, I now have a Pittsburgh Google Voice number, which I haven't done anything with. But I could not believe how bad the UI was, because we've been talking endlessly about Google engineering versus customer experience. And aside from their very easy to use and simplified search homepage, you realize the rest of their UI, aside from their biggest homepage thing, is a disaster.
Oh, I know. It's beyond bad. All of that, because I use a lot of their services, Google Voice, Google Checkout, Google Analytics and stuff, and they're all variations of horrible. I mean, really horrible. And they're so clearly proud of the fact that they're horrible, which is stunning. You know, Google is such a weird, weird company.
Maybe that's all changing now, since Larry Page is the new CEO, basically kicking out Eric Schmidt.
Kicking him upstairs to other projects.
It's like I like John Gruber's take because I'm a big John Gruber fanboy now. But it was, was he pushed or did he jump? And he basically said both.
Yeah.
You know, he's kicked him. You know, it's like you're promoting failure, the classic Microsoft solution. So yeah, you know, maybe there'll be. I guess there was some big arguments over, what to do with China, and I guess that started the process of, well, maybe we should have a new situation going here.
What's the argument?
Oh, whether or not they should offer, whether or not they should censor search results in order to be in the Chinese market.
But that they had that big argument, and then they pulled out when China.
Well, apparently something around that argument internally was like a straw on the camel's back, flipped a switch. You know, and it's an interesting argument because every big multinational company has to address that. You know, if for them it was more of a thing because of their vaunted don't be evil.
Yeah, and that was part of the reason, supposedly, because they had originally agreed to censor it, and then China turned out they were doing industrial spying on their, you know, inserting code in their product anyway. So they realized, oh, I guess we can't not be evil, or we just have to pull out. But I don't know. That's interesting. I hadn't heard any of that scuttlebutt.
Yeah. Any random topic you want to bring up?
Well, so my brother and I I was over visiting my brother on Friday, and we're watching, as we are wont to do, we're watching MSNBC's Countdown. And
big news.
Towards the end of it, he says, well, coming up next, I'm going to talk about this will be the last episode of, or he said, this will probably be the last episode of Countdown. And we're going, what? Kind of what? We're going, and we're just offhandedly watching. Oh, he's probably changing the name or who knows what, because anyway. And then he comes back, and we're sort of half watching, half not. I'm having a conversation with my sister-in-law, and he explains how I'm leaving. This is my last show. And I'm like talking to my sister-in-law, and I'm going, but hang on, Vicky, hang on. And I say, did we, Mitch, rewind that, pass that back up, and we watch it. And he's saying, yeah, this is it. It's over. And we had to watch it twice just to make sure we heard it right. And then it was over. And it was kind of crazy. I'm still not totally sure what went on, because you read all the scuttlebutt, and of course, he and MSNBC are not talking. So there's a pretty strong meme out there that it was because of Comcast pressure. Comcast was Comcast supposedly. Conspiracy theory is Comcast. A lot of people involved have been heavily involved in Republican politics, and they, as part of this deal, they said you got to get rid of that guy, and they were putting pressure. I personally think that's 100% crap. I don't believe that for a second. I don't see any reason why they would have to do that. It's ridiculous. Personally, I don't see that. I have a feeling they just are perpetually annoyed by this guy who is a pain in their ass and in an internal politics way and other stuff. So that's why I think they probably got rid of him.
I read something this morning, and I don't even remember where it was, one of my normal political sites, where a theory that kind of makes sense is that the Comcast deal closes Monday, or you know, goes into effect Monday, and the theory is that he brought this stuff up and said, you know, I want guarantees that, you know, I won't be meddled with or this and that, and if you don't want to do that, then let's talk about the contract now and not in 2 years, and that's sort of
I guess that's possible, but there's. I mean, there's only so much they're going to be willing to do. I don't know. It could be. It seems like they went into this together, and they cut him a deal that he was comfortable enough to say, "I'm not going to talk about it, and I'm willing to sit out this thing."
Because it includes a gag order.
It is weird that it happened exactly 1 year to the day that Conan lost his show, which was kind of odd, because that was also sort of famously use Richard's famously term. That was also a thing where a lot of the Comcast deal revolved around addressing and dealing with that particular issue. So, and of course, I think that Comcast deal is an absolute massive disaster. It's too bad because I've been following a lot of what Al Franken has said, watched his videos, and he's so right on the money about how dangerous and awful this is. And it's amazing how little it seems to matter to the general public, and how it's just, they're just going right along. And I'm thinking, you're insane. You're letting the absolute number one gatekeeper of content potential gatekeeper of content in America, cable provider, now control the number one providers of content, which is, you know, NBC, USA Network, Univision, all of these things. It's insane. And Comcast has, prior to this, clearly demonstrated an interest and willingness to throttle back stuff at the expense or for the benefit of their own product. And I don't see why we don't think this isn't going to happen again. It's just a disaster. You know,
you and I are on the same page.
Yeah. Oh, but by the way, one interesting thing happened while we're watching Keith Olbermann. My brother, he announced there's zero chance he is going to vote for Barack Obama in 2 years. Zero chance. And he's attacking it from everything. My brother and I are pretty much in lockstep politically on everything, and nothing has changed except for the fact that he has just gotten so ticked off, read too much Crooks and Liars and watched too much Keith Olbermann, that he does not see any appreciable difference between Obama and Bush. And in all of these, he just starts out listing all the things that I, and probably you, agree with, the things about, you know, why we have decided it's okay to unilaterally say a U.S. citizen can be murdered outside of the United States. We have kept open Guantanamo Bay. We've done all this, you know, all this stuff. So he's just going, it cannot happen. And I'm like going, okay, Mitch, you and I are in agreement, but I go, you're talking the same way I talked in 1999, 2000, when I was saying, really, there's not going to be any difference between Gore and Bush. And so I thought, screw it, I'm going to vote for Nader. And now I realize, oh my God, how wrong I was. It took me very short order to realize what a stupid move. And he goes, there is no difference. I am not going to vote. So anyway, the reason I bring it up is because it felt very much for the first time somewhat akin to conversations I've heard you discuss with a certain family member of yours that is perhaps, you know, different politically. And I'm not different than my brother, but suddenly there was no discussion, no argument, and I wasn't going to press it because we kind of agree at the same thing, but it felt really weird. I started to realize how most of our conversations are us just mutually agreeing with each other, and how different it was to kind of disagree. Not that I don't agree with him, but it was weird. So anyway, so needless to say, Obama has lost one vote this year. And I told my uncle about it, and my uncle could not contain his glee. I told him, you know, Mitch absolutely is not voting for Obama. And for about 20 seconds there, he didn't understand what I meant, but he was going, wow, Mitch is definitely voting for Republican. That's cool. He's gotten some sense. And then I explained to him, no, Uncle Mitch, no, under no circumstances. No, he's looking for the newest Ralph Nader. He just isn't voting for Obama. And then my uncle got the smiling face and realized, well, it doesn't make any difference, does it? It's just one more vote in our column, essentially. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to address it with my brother on that angle. Do you really want to satisfy all these people? I mean, that's what you're doing. And anyway, I just thought that was kind of funny. It was a weird conversation. I realized I had never I don't think in 20 years I've had a political conversation with my brother where we weren't pretty much of identical belief. So.
Okay, next random topic. The scuttlebutt, the rumors about iPad 2 and iPhone 5. I don't care as much about the iPhone 5 because I'm not going to get one. Because I'm on the off year cycle. But the iPad 2, there's a couple of rumors. Everyone agrees there will be front and back facing cameras so you can do FaceTime. And that's great. And then two other rumors. One is that it will actually have an SD card slot.
Yeah, which surprised the hell out of me.
Which, you know, in terms of making it easier to transfer photos in, it's like, okay, I can see that.
And not just photos, but maybe. Unless they don't open it up. There's a lot of things you can do with that more effectively. It suddenly becomes a better tool for, like, music and using it as a vehicle for video and other stuff. It just becomes better in a lot of ways.
It's also one of those things. It's also one of those things where you're like, that doesn't seem the direction that they usually go.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
I mean, if it starts as a lockdown product, it's going to stay as a lockdown product. Because they hate ports. Look at the MacBook Air. They're always, they're trying to get rid of ports and make it, a closed network system. But so anyway, that would be. But of course, the big rumor is the resolution. Will it be either double resolution, or the so-called Retina display, or any increased resolution or not? And I've been reading a lot of articles going back and forth about. Yes, no, or this makes sense, or that doesn't make sense. And it's really fascinating, I mean, both just on its own, but also in terms of how it informs my desires. Because I'd pretty much decided I was going to get an iPad 2. And I start reading, oh my God, it's going to have increased resolution. I'm like, oh, I want it even more now. But then I read an article, like Gruber pointed out, like, okay, well, if it increases the resolution, it can pretty much only double the resolution. Because that way, all of the existing apps can scale up easily.
Well, yeah, in theory, it would be like double or quadruple. And quadruple is insanity. It wouldn't. And that's what people are talking about. And I'm looking at like...
No.
Well, originally...
People are talking about quadruple.
The websites I was looking at, they were saying it would be 3,000... Or I can't remember what the pixel ratio was. But 3,000. It was some insane number. And I was going,
I never saw that, so I don't know what websites you're going to, but clearly this.
Well, I was looking at, I'm going, okay, so my laptop has 1900 by 1280. And that I know of, the most pixels on any laptop is 1900 by 1200. So it's just a bit more dense than mine, although not as big as my laptop. Because my laptop is almost a 19-inch laptop. And so I'm thinking, so they're going to squeeze more pixels, obviously in a much denser format, but more pixels than my laptop, the biggest in the world. They're going to squeeze that in the iPad. It makes no sense to me. It would be it'd be cool, but it would be you need some kind of video driver to throw all those pixels up constantly. And I don't know that there is anything that's that small and that wouldn't run that hot.
I don't have the existing resolution in front of me. I know it's less than 720p, so I don't know what the double number is. But no, the doubled is extremely feasible. Nobody I read was talking about anything more than Retina, and even most people don't think Retina because the iPhone 4's Retina display has a pixel density of something like a little over 300 and change pixels per inch.
Yeah, which is, but that's like it was a quadrupling of the existing iPhone resolution. In other words, it's quadrupling because when people think of doubling, it's actually quadrupling. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you can't just double it. It ends up being four times as dense. If you double it, the X axis, you're also doubling it the Y axis, which makes it a quadrupling. Does that make sense? In other words, if you add up the number of pixels, let's say you have a let's say you have a 2x2 pixel screen. So that means it's 4 pixels. So if you make it 4 pixels wide by 4 pixels tall, people will go, oh, we've doubled it. Well, no, now you have 16 pixels as opposed to 4 pixels.
Hold on, I'm pulling up the thing. I see what you're saying. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. Rethinking. I'm trying to read quickly.
I hear you.
15-inch Pro, Palm Trio. There's a pretty good article about this on Apple Insider. It's in the top bar. iPad, 9.7-inch, Samsung Galaxy.
You know, the weird thing is usually the last year they announced it, the first week of February, but I haven't even heard of them setting up any announcement yet. Usually, don't they have at least a week where they give you ahead of time? So it's kind of interesting. Nothing's come down the pike. Maybe it's because of Steve Jobs' health issues.
Okay, it looks like the existing resolution is 1024 by 768. And so what was... So then the possible... Okay, results in... Double the iPads.
So if you may...
2560 by 1440. No, 2048.
Okay, so 2048 by 1546, that's not double the resolution. That's four times the number of pixels.
Okay, well, now we're just talking about semantics, and that's not
okay. Really, but I'm telling you, when people say double the resolution, they're not thinking it through. You have to get a video card that can handle four times the amount of information.
Most of the articles I'm reading are referring to it as pixel doubling to get to you know, take an existing app and have it be in there. So I mean, you're right, but a lot of people are referring to it as doubling. Okay. So let's move on. So but then, you know, like I said, there's a number of factors that then go into this. One of which you already mentioned was, can the hardware support the resolution? Is there enough RAM? Is the processor beefy enough? And there seems to be some, I don't know if disagreement's the right word, but there's a discussion over some people thinking, well, the new chipset that they're probably going to have will. And others saying, well, it probably, to do it would be more expensive at this point in time, given the component costs. But that, then others say, well, you know what? As part of Apple's earning call, they said that they spent $3.9 billion on pre-orders for components. And when you start buying in the massive quantities that Apple does, it actually reduces your cost. Maybe you actually can put out a doubled/quadrupled resolution this year at the existing iPad price points. So anyway, I start thinking, I was going to buy an iPad 2 anyway, but what if it doesn't have this magically doubled/quadrupled resolution? Because now I'm thinking, oh my God, of course I want that. It's more numbers. And if they don't have it, do I actually want to wait another year and hoping I get it then? Oh, you know, it's the classic nerd tech quandary of, when do you go all in on something knowing that there's another technology or aspect to it that you know is going to be improved next year?
I've started to come around thinking maybe I do want one after all, because I started to think, dang it, I lug this stupid laptop everywhere, but the things I do at home from it are rarely, sometimes I'm doing actual work stuff on it, you know, I mean, necessitating a laptop, but a lot of times it'd be better to leave it at my desk. And I, cause mostly I'm sitting in my living room watching TV or something, and the laptop is me scanning IMDb and the New York Times and stuff. And honestly, an iPad is way, way better for that stuff. So, and if it had that resolutionary thing, that would make me very happy. And that resolution, I mean, that is awesome. That is, if it was 2048 or whatever by 1500, that's more pixels than my laptop. That's kind of incredible.
Yeah, and they're pointing out, and, you know, and this article in Apple Insider is pointing out that, you know, it would be incredible. It's certainly more than video playback requires, but, you know, they're pointing out that the iPad is more than just a video playback machine. And if you look at how Apple is treating their interface with gesture and interacting with the information and more app-based and touching, then something that approaches the Retina display makes it a lot more compelling to use. You might not even know as a user why you like using the iPad more than something else with a lower display or lower resolution. But you will like using a higher resolution device more. And if they can get an iPad 2 out with this proposed new resolution, it would really be, it would continue to put the iPad above the competitors that are starting to come out, because no one else can afford, no one else is putting anything out at this resolution. Certainly not at the price point. A lot of the competitors coming out are more expensive.
It'd be interesting to compare a Kindle side by side with the Kindle app on the iPad that's at that Retina display, because the fact is those Kindles look so good to read with that thing, and I'm wondering if Apple can compete by just throwing more pixels at it, and that might be the difference.
Yeah, and I definitely thought about that. And one thing to consider is Retina is over 300 pixel density on the iPhone, but they're saying that it's actually less than that on the iPad, because the usable distance, the iPad tends to be farther away from your eye, so you can have a lower pixel density and still achieve the same effect. So I think if you double slash quadruple, that's my new phrase, the existing iPad's resolution, it's not quite 300 pixel density, but it's the equivalent effect of what they did on the iPhone. Excuse me. Which they're saying is basically magazine or print resolution. So if in fact you do get that on an iPad, I mean, and you're, it's in theory indistinguishable from a printed page.
Oh, you stupid.
And you're right, that would be fascinating to compare against a Kindle or even a book. And God, I want one. And man, I really, really, really hope they do it. I hope they find a way to make the chip support it. I hope they find a way to do it so that the price point stay the same. One thing Andy Anatko pointed out in one of the last Mac breaks was, Apple has a $499 price point on the cheapest iPad.
Yeah.
And almost none of the competitors do. There are a few no-name Android tablets that are cheap, but I can't remember if they're subsidized, if you have to get it with a cellular subscription, but the Samsung Galaxy Tab is subsidized. There's a post on Engadget about how the new Motorola tablet, I think it's the Zoom X-O-O-M, the cheapest version of that is $799.
Jeez.
And, you look at a lot of these competitors, and they're just not apples to apples.
Yeah, if I got one, though, no matter what, I may not need to get the one with the most RAM, but I absolutely would have to get one with the 3G. Even if I never got it and used it, it would kill me to not have that option. Like, I'm going to go on vacation or whatever, and for a month be able to sign up for that service. It would drive me nuts not to be able to have that option.
I honestly don't know.
Well, actually, that said, if the new iPhone allows tethering, I mean that mobile Wi-Fi, and that you can sign up for on a month-to-month basis, then that might render it not necessary.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
But then again, I probably will never have access to that, because that's almost certainly a feature they will not provide to their legacy
customers. Well, they're saying that that'll come up in iOS 4.3 for AT&T.
Yeah, but it's going to be exactly like it was with tethering. Tethering. Right. Now you have to get rid of your... You can have it if you get rid of your unlimited plan.
Oh, that's a
good point. I'm never getting rid of my unlimited plan. I don't need that feature that badly as much as I want it.
It'll be interesting. I mean, and there's where the Verizon... And, there's some talk of, maybe when the next iPhone comes out, iPhone 5, maybe at that point it's open to all carriers.
Yeah.
The CDMA phone is available to Sprint and T-Mobile. And, then you can start, then it becomes a price plan comparison. Who's got the best data plan? And you wonder if AT&T will be able to not have an unlimited plan.
Yeah. Apparently Verizon's contract is definitely non-exclusive. Although at a certain point, it doesn't really matter. I'm surprised they didn't ring out some concession out of Verizon saying, listen, we're going to let you be the second carrier, but we won't let Sprint or the other one open up for like 2 years. But apparently that didn't happen. So I don't know. I won't be getting an iPad anytime soon because absolutely I'll be getting the new iPhone, and I've got too many other little/big things that I need to get. I mean, a new iPhone for $600 versus a new big screen TV for $1,000. I'll probably be getting the TV first. So,
you know,
anyway, if we're in random stuff, can I talk about the Facebook movie?
Sure.
So I got the Social Network. It's like the first DVD Blu-ray that I've purchased in a long time, but I figured I have all these other Fincher movies. I got that. So I liked it a lot. I can see why everybody else likes it. I mean, I'm at one level, I'm just kind of stunned what a complete story it is, considering it is essentially a biopic. But the story is so perfectly encapsulated, and that's never easy to tell a story in a cinematic way when you feel so compelled to deal with real life. And apparently, for the most part, they hewed rather close to real life. But it's kind of amazing, an amazing partnership. And I was also interested watching a lot of the making of stuff to see how clearly a part of the entire process of the movie Aaron Sorkin was. He was clearly on set the entire time, to the point that Fincher left the set on the final day. I think he's done this before, where he never directs the final scene. He has somebody else do it, and he leaves before the movie's over. And he had Sorkin direct the final scene. I mean, it was clearly a partnership. It's funny, you see Fincher interested, and he's kind of testy talking about Sorkin, but you get the feeling it's just more jokey testy. But I'm surprised that some guy who's as exacting as Fincher sort of welcomed an equally dominant person like Sorkin to be entirely part of the process for the whole movie. Really interesting. So anyway, I liked the movie a lot. I thought it was pretty good.
I got one more thing, and then my throat is starting to go south quickly.
Oh, wait, before I forget, I sent you an email, but one thing I forgot about that movie was I was stunned at how fake a certain effect looked. The brothers looked great, but at one point, Jesse Eisenberg is like walking outside and it's cold, and you can see their breaths as they're talking, and it just looked extraordinarily fake to me. I'm going, this doesn't look real at all. And then in the commentary track, Fincher points out, oh yeah, we had to create the breath there. We didn't want to make him sit out in the cold, thinking, dude, that didn't work very well. It just looked awful. Every time they breathed, it looked very computer generated ish. But anyway, I liked it. So what's the other thing you want to talk about?
Oh, hell, did you make me forget it?
I'm sorry.
Wells. Wells is at Sundance right now, Wells.
Yep.
And he posted a picture I came across this morning, which was literally unbelievable.
What was that?
It was a shot from his seat in a theater, like basically a balcony level, where the railing is this solid railing basically obscures half of the screen when you're sitting in the seat.
Oh,
and he's pointing
God.
Out this was designed on purpose by the architect. The only way you can see the screen is to awkwardly lean forward, and it messes up your muscles and your back and your legs.
Oh my God.
To do it.
I'm looking at that. Wow, that's like a legitimate real theater too.
And you're like, how? Every theater I've ever been in, no matter how crappy, you can at least see the screen. That is amazing to me.
Wow, that's awful. That reminds me of the original design of the Mariner Stadium second tier seats, where they had those rails right exactly in everybody's way until they figured out a way to address them somehow. But that's just awful. Actually, I'm looking at that. That is not really an official theater. It's sort of one of those the problem with a place like Sundance is you have to basically build 8 theaters in a town that when there's no movie festival, literally can't support one theater. So they have these combination quasi theaters, and that looks like it's possibly one of those, but that's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. This is absolutely insane. And if you sit up taller, everybody behind you can't see. I mean, this is just awful.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, if I was the movie producer, I'd be going, oh my God, don't book it in that theater. And if I do, don't let any journalists or people of import sit in these seats.
Exactly. Well, my throat is
getting sick too. I'm going on 2 weeks. I'm heading into my third week of illness.
Well,
although I do feel a lot better.
All right. So unless there's anything else you wanted to talk about.
Nope.
Then we will wrap up by saying, my name is Matt.
My name is Ricardo Montalban.